Hello and welcome to the second episode of She Runs the World, the first one of the semester. So just to give a little recap, this podcast is going to be about women in and around the Georgetown community, and we're going to be interviewing them about their careers and what it's like being a woman in those fields. I'm Kylie.
And I'm Emily.
And for this episode, we are going to be talking to Laura Cutway. She is the Title IX coordinator for Georgetown University. In this role, she ensures that the university is compliant with Title IX and does not discriminate on the basis of sex. She is responsible for overseeing the university's response to sexual misconduct, which includes sexual assault, sexual harassment, dating violence, domestic violence, and stalking. By promptly addressing complaints of sexual misconduct, limiting their effects, and preventing their recurrence. Prior to her role within IDEA, Laura served as the Director of Disability Services and the Sexual Assault and Relationship Violence Liaison at Georgetown Law. She has also held roles within disability services at both Catholic University and Villanova University. Laura is trained as a DC Rape Crisis Counselor. She previously served as a member of the Board of Director for the Amera Legal Center, an organization that provides legal services for individuals whose rights have been violated through commercial sex. She has also presented nationally on issues related to campus sexual violence. Laura attended Villanova, where she received both her Master's of Science in Counseling and Human Relations and her Bachelor's of Arts in Psychology with minors in Business and Spanish. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me today.
So why don't we start by having you tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you become interested in this line of work?
Sure. So I'm originally from Canada, but I've been in DC now for about 10 years. I originally became interested in this work when I was serving as a sexual assault and relationship violence liaison at the Law Center. It was definitely the most impactful work that I was doing. When you're working with somebody who's experienced a trauma, it's meeting them where they are is really a time in their life where you can make a significant difference for them. I've always actually worked in compliance-based roles before it was in disability services, and so it was a natural fit for me to move into another compliance-based role. Since schools were shifting their focus of Title IX from gender equality in athletics to campus sexual assault, I was intrigued by how this was playing out at different schools, and I thought I could bring a helpful perspective, not just in ensuring fairness, but in supporting all individuals that are involved.
Why did you decide to come to Georgetown specifically?
Well, that was back in 2010 when I started at the Law Center, and I'd heard great things about the university. It was a great fit at the time, and so I just decided it was a good next step for me.
Okay, so can you tell us a little bit about like what you do on a day-to-day basis?
Sure. So it's a good question. In a nutshell, my role is to ensure that the university is compliant with Title IX, which is, as you mentioned, a federal law that prohibits sex discrimination for institutions that receive federal funding. Once the university knows of sexual assault or sexual misconduct, Title IX requires the school to take prompt action to eliminate the harassment, prevent its recurrence, and address its effects. So in the big picture, that's what I'm doing. But what does that involve day to day? It's mostly following up with students who have reported incidents of sexual misconduct. And just to give a couple of examples, Title IX offers things called interim measures, and so these are supports that can be put into place for both respondents and complainants to help them through that healing process. So these supports can take the form of protective measures, academic adjustments in the classroom, so maybe an extension on a paper or a test, housing accommodations, things like that, moving somebody around to a different location. So myself and the other Title IX coordinators will also work with individuals interested in going through the grievance procedures, so either through the student conduct procedures or through IDEA's grievance procedures, the Institutional Diversity, Equity, and Affirmative Action Office. Those would be the procedures if somebody wanted to bring a complaint against a faculty or staff member. I also do trainings on campus to ensure that faculty and staff are aware of what their reporting obligations are. And I'd say one of the most important things that I do is ensure campus safety. So I'm looking at patterns within the community. If there's, say, a respondent's name that I've heard a couple times, or if we're starting to see trends, we can do further outreach and different types of training on campus and ensure that everybody is safe.
What do you think is, like, the most difficult part of all of that? Like,
it's a good question. The hardest part is hearing the stories of what people have been through. But I think it's also really powerful that we can help them. There are lots of different resources and supports in place that the university can offer to help them through that process.
So, like, are people, like, generally, like, educated on what's available to them to help out? Or are you doing, like, a lot of, like, outreach to, like, inform people that this resource is there?
So both. We're doing a lot of outreach. The climate survey, which was given in January of 2016, the Sexual Assault and Misconduct Climate Survey, that showed us that people weren't aware of the resources that are available on campus. I think it was only about a quarter of students actually knew about resources. And so we have targeted our outreach to make sure that people know where to go, where to get support, what it would feel like, what it would entail to make a report to the Title IX office or to seek confidential counseling or to go through a conduct procedure. So we're working together with many different offices on campus to raise that awareness so people know what's available.
So your background seems to suggest that you're more an advocate of the victim. So in this role, how do you remain impartial?
It's a good question. So when I worked at the Law Center, I was an advocate. And part of why I was so interested in this position is because I was curious, one, about what schools are doing, but also I think it's really important to provide supports for both parties involved. And so impartiality is actually not that hard to provide. When you have processes in place that are fair and impartial, that have been vetted and, you know, we follow best practices, having those processes in place really make fairness not really an issue because we have such, you know, well-established and thoughtful processes, and we have good people in those roles, competent people that know what they're doing. We have fact finders, investigators that are fully trained and are able to, you know, make non-judgmental calls and can really support people in a fair way.
So you said you give support for both parties involved. Like, mm-hmm. What's the nature of the support you give to someone who may be guilty of sexual misconduct?
Yep, it's a good question. So both parties need support going through that process. It's a stressful experience for everybody involved. So for respondents in particular, we will provide them or get them connected to CAPS, Counseling and Psychiatric Services, to make sure that they have a support person that can work with them. Also, we have what's called process navigators, and so those are people that are assigned, if the student wants it, to help them navigate the conduct process, so that they are aware of what that process will feel like and other supports that are available on campus. And then our primary support for survivors is health education services, where we have fully trained confidential counselors within that office to provide support for services or for survivors, and then survivors can also use CAPS as well.
Now, since Georgetown is like a Catholic school, and faith plays a role in a lot of what we do here at Georgetown, do you think that kind of like impacts or has a role in your work or in like the nature of like how people respond to these events?
Maybe. I think it might play a role in reporting. We know, again, from our climate survey that students are less likely to report. And so we've looked over the last year. We had a task force that met, the Sexual Assault and Misconduct Task Force, to look at all the reasons why people might not report. And faith-based reasons could influence if it's not something that people are comfortable talking about or feel like it's safe to talk about. They might not feel comfortable coming forward. And so we're, you know, again, doing our best to raise awareness about resources and to make sure that people feel that reporting is a safe option for them.
When we talk about sexual assault, like, it's a very sensitive topic, but as we all know, that straight women aren't always mm-hmm. the victims. So how do you approach a case where the victim might be male or LGBTQ differently, or do you approach it differently?
It's a good question. I would say the most noticeable difference is that students from marginalized backgrounds aren't comfortable coming forward. They don't know what to expect. They don't know if the person they're going to report to is culturally competent to understand what their experience might have been like. We know that it's different. And so it's really putting ourselves in places so that students see us and realize that, oh, hey, you know, I've seen her before. She looks friendly. I can come talk to her. She looks like she'd understand what's going on. So it's really creating, again, that safe space so that people feel comfortable coming forward, but also know what they're going to get when they come forward, know what the process would entail. And so we've worked over the last year to really build our website to make sure that there's a lot of information up there so people understand what it might feel like to come forward.
Now, is there anything we can do just like in the campus climate overall so people are feeling just more comfortable in general?
Yes. I would say the biggest recommendation I would have would be bystander intervention. So that's an evidence-based practice that equips students with the skills and the knowledge of how to safely intervene. So last year we piloted the program with student leaders. I don't know if you're familiar with it, where they went through a 4.5-hour training on bystander intervention. This year, as part of the task force recommendations, we are requiring, it's a mandate now, for all first-year students to go through this 4.5-hour training, and so that will take place this coming semester. And that's really the best way to intervene. It's having people look out for one another. It's figuring out what are safe ways to intervene when people see potentially risky situations. And it's empowering people to be able to actually take that step. And, you know, sometimes it's just very simple, like, hey, do you want a glass of water? You know, do you want to go to the washroom with me? Something like that, where you can really just put one step in between and help people take care of one another.
So how safe would you say Georgetown is?
That's probably a close to impossible question to answer. I think, you know, bad things happen on all campuses at any point, unfortunately. But I do think there are lots of things that we can do to help protect one another. Bystander intervention is definitely one of them. GUPD has lots of great resources that for students, safety resources, safety planning, safe rides, live safe application, walking escorts, things like that, that I think it comes down to all of us coming together to protect one another and look out for one another.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I think, yeah, very like nurturing culture, you know, there's a lot of emphasis here on caring for one another, which I think is important,
mm-hmm.
but maybe just kind of like learning how and like learning, you know, with the bystander intervention and whatnot. But like, how do you think Georgetown like may compare to other universities, like issues being like more or less prevalent or particular types of issues maybe?
Yep. So when we gave the climate survey, we used the AAU survey, the American Association or Association of American Universities, and there were about 27 other schools that gave that survey. We were on the higher end in terms of prevalence rates for
really?
Sexual assault for our undergraduate students. For our graduate students, we came in a little bit under the average or below the average. So I think all schools have work to do in this area. Some people also say that the more we build the programs and the more people can identify what's happened to them, the higher the prevalence rate will be. And that's actually a good thing, right? You want people to be able to get the support if that's what they want. So we actually, numbers could go up before they go down once people start to really be aware of what's going on. And so it's, again, it's just making sure people are connected to those resources.
So I did some research about what a Title IX coordinator does, and the Georgetown website said that the mission is to, quote, help provide a safe educational and work environment to students and employees. Do you get a lot of cases where involving employees, or is it mostly between students?
So we do. We get cases that involve staff and faculty. I would say it's probably a handful each semester. The majority of our cases are between students.
Yeah. I come from Michigan, so like one of the big pieces of news last year was that the Michigan State University, I think marching band director, was texting inappropriate messages to one of his students. And if you know anything about Michigan State, the culture revolves around football. So the marching band director is very powerful. So it would be very terrifying to find yourself in that situation.
Yep. And unfortunately, far too many have, as it pops up on the news.
Yeah.
We definitely see different schools under investigation.
So this is a very timely podcast because of what happened last week. Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos announced that she was going to start reviewing Obama-era Title IX guidelines and maybe rescinding them. Do you know specifically what's going to happen? Because I've read a couple articles and it doesn't lay out anything specific in terms of policy.
You're at about the same place I am. I don't know anything specific that's going to happen. She was very clear in her guidance that she thinks that the current guidance is failing students, and so she plans to start the process of notice and comment. That was the one thing that she did express in her speech last week. And so that will put the guidance out towards individuals all over. Students can comment. Anyone can comment and gather some feedback. I've heard that the Department of Education may produce interim guidance in between, you know, if she rescinds, which she hasn't done yet, if she rescinds the Dear Colleague letter, and before they put out new guidance, there may be interim guidance. So we are all just waiting to see what that's going to look like and what that will require of the university.
Can you tell us a little bit about how the relationship between the government and the universities work? Like, in terms of these guidelines, are they like a bare minimum upon which the university can build additional policies, or is it like a strict, like, you have to follow these codes of conduct?
Well, the law you have to follow, so Title IX at its basic level is a law that you have to follow, and then there's been other pieces that have been produced, like the Dear Colleague of 2011, which is what most people are talking about, that explains in more detail what schools should be doing, and that schools are at risk of losing their federal funding if they don't follow those guidelines. So it's not law, but most schools feel the need to follow. And so it will really just, you know, it will depend on what she does. Guidelines are they carry a lot of weight, and so we would and we have been following them.
So is there any way you can, like, prepare for that transition? Like, should there be one, or is it going to be kind of like an abrupt switch, or how do you think that would? And clearly, a lot's up in the air right now.
There is a lot up in the air. It would be, the way I think I see it is a small working group would get together at the university and look at what the new guidance or the interim guidance is asking us to do, and what that would look like here. Do we need to actually make any changes? And just work through the process that way. So I don't think it would be an abrupt overnight type of thing. It would be a working group that would get together to think about how we would transition if we needed to on campus.
What do you mean by if we needed to?
It depends. I've also heard that she may, this is all speculation, but that she may say to the universities, it's up to the schools to figure out how to handle it. And so in that case, we would look at, do we want to make any changes, or do we want to keep the process that we have? So it really just depends on what she puts out as her guidance.
Now, based on your experience, your perspective, is there anything really do you think needs to be changed that, like, we could be doing better, or like might be more effective for students and faculty?
I think right now we're all still we have a really good process in place, and we're still mastering that process. We're still building our support functions. We just hired a new full-time training and confidential counselor in health education services. So we're really still building. We're just now mandating the bystander intervention training for first year. So there's a lot that we're still doing, and I don't think we're quite there yet. We still want to see the results of all this good work that the university is doing. The university is still committed to furthering the work that we're doing, and so I think there's always more that we can be doing right now, you know, with our climate survey, which told us that this is happening on our campus, which I don't think was a shock to some of us here, but we still have a lot of work to do.
It's definitely frightening. I mean, like, do you think that, like our urban setting has anything to do with that? Or, like why might Georgetown's be higher than the average?
There's a lot of reasons that people speculate it could be urban, it could, you know, it could be a number of different things. I think, you know, this is a problem that all schools are facing right now. And so even if schools' numbers are lower, I think it's still a problem. Anybody that goes through this, it has a huge, huge impact on their life.
So. Well, this podcast is primarily about careers, so I thought we'd end on a more uplifting note. So what is your advice for women going into this field, whether it be counseling in general or specifically on issues of sexual assault, or maybe into the legal field on these issues?
Sure. So there's a couple of things that I'd offer. It's a very broad field, as you just mentioned. Yeah. There's a lot of different ways. And so thinking through ahead of time, which way do you want to have your impact? Is it through counseling? Is it through medical services? Is it through legal services? And really figuring out what fits best for you and your professional goals. I would also say to take care of yourself. It's tough work. It's important to treat yourself to things that make you happy, whether that's going for a walk or a chocolate bar, like whatever it is that helps you that helps you through the process and brings you joy and maybe a little separation from the work. It's really important that self-care is a really big deal.
I can imagine that being a very, very stressful position. Gosh. And then there's probably a lot of like a teamwork part on the faculty end, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where there's a very, very much a support network. Because I've heard that, like, I know, like, in any times that I've been stressed, I'm like always like reaching out to other people. But is there a challenge to that, like, with the confidentiality in the teamwork, or?
Yeah, I would say actually one of the best parts of my job are the relationships that I have. The relationships that I have with students, the relationships that I have with the staff and faculty that are doing this work alongside me. We have great, very thoughtful, competent people that are involved in this work, and it definitely is a teamwork. A team process to make this all happen and to support the students. And so having that support of great colleagues is really important and really makes this work, a little bit easier.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. You've kind of already answered my last question, but what do you love most about the work that you do?
I would say it's definitely the relationships. Both again with the students, where I feel like I can really help them at a time when they're in need, and then also with colleagues that make the work better. It's difficult, but by working with people that I respect and through processes that I trust, it makes the complicated work worthwhile.
All right.
That's really great. Thank you so much for all that you do around campus.
Of course. Thank you for bringing me here today and allowing me to share a little bit with you and with others about what we do.
For this episode, we wanted to give anyone out there who needs services a list of services on campus. So there is the Health Education Services, which employ 2 full-time confidential counselors. You can make an appointment at the email sarp@georgetown.edu. Other resources can be found at sexualassault.georgetown.edu. You can follow us on Twitter at gtownvoice or at halftimegu. Emily?
I am at mlejaster.
And I am at kaei_li. You can find more podcasts on the georgetownvoice.com website or subscribe to the Voice Podcast Network on iTunes. Thank you.